You are listening to The Pulse, Rod Murray's e-learning tech podcast, formerly Rod's Pulse Podcast, number 90.
Hi, this is Rod Murray. Welcome back to The Pulse. That was a clip from a song, Don't Be Long, The Beatles versus Elkin. That's a mashup by Elkin, which is a 60s-influenced band from Dublin, Ireland. So stay tuned for the full song at the end of my podcast. This podcast is sponsored again by Inside Higher Ed, the online source for news, opinion, and jobs for all of higher education. The topic for today is copyright fair use. Speaking of copyright, the music I play here has been cleared for royalty-free use in a podcast. Let's hope this mashup comes under fair use. When working with faculty, I often get the question, can I put this XYZ photo, cartoon, article, or video up on my LMS course site? I don't always have a totally convincing answer for them, but I do usually recall rules of thumb that I seem to remember, something like you can only use X percent of the content, but you can't use the same excerpt year after year, but you probably don't have to worry about getting sued since our LMS is locked down from prying eyes. The law around the use of copyright material is a bit confusing. After all, fair use per se is not a law. When I note that EDUCAUSE Live was hosting a presentation on the future of fair use, I thought I'd better refresh my understanding. After all, the MPAA, RIAA, DMCA, and other alphabet soup organizations are often mentioned in the media when someone is sued for millions for uploading copyrighted material, so it's time for a reality check. In general, fair use allows people to use copyrighted materials without authorization for purposes such as, quote, criticism, comment, news reporting, teaching, scholarship, or research, so long as their use qualifies as fair use in the light of the four factors set out in the Code 17, Section 107 of the United States Code. The four factors, which you'll hear more about, are as follows. Factor one is the purpose and the character of the use, including whether such use is of a commercial nature or is for nonprofit educational purposes. Two, the nature of the copyrighted work. Three, the amount and substantiality of the portion used in relation to the copyrighted work as a whole. And four, the effect of the use upon the potential market for or value of the copyrighted work. So in the EDUCAUSE Live program, which is hosted by Steve Verona, the Senior Policy Director at EDUCAUSE, Steve Anderson discusses strategies for overcoming institutional roadblocks related to publishing and teaching with copyrighted media. Steve is the Director of Media Arts and Practice, PhD program, and Assistant Professor of Interactive Media in the School of Cinematic Arts at the University of Southern California. I certainly encourage you to watch the full presentation when they answer the question, as fair use protections and potentials continue to expand, how can non-specialists help shape a more rational future for fair use? So the topics included the myths and realities of fair use, best practices, DMCA exemptions, and the practicalities of working with copyrighted media across the full spectrum of scholarly and pedagogical activities. Of course, I can only touch on some of the main issues here as I see them. We'll play excerpts from the presentation about the problem, the solution, and some of the misconceptions. As always, I'll post links to all of the resources in this episode of The Pulse in my show notes at www.rodspulsepodcast.com. So here we go with excerpt number one. This is about the problem. In short, the problem is that there are obstacles to educational uses of copyrighted material, and it has to do with the lack of clarity, certainly digital rights management, the impracticality of licensing, and undue gatekeeping by our own institutions.
We need to kind of like be proactive and be assertive and really kind of use it or lose it. At that time also there was a lot of pretty good scholarship and research coming out about what happens when people aren't educated about their rights and responsibilities under fair use. The Berkman Center published an important white paper that was talking about what happens when when people aren't clear on their rights, when DRM is sort of the default way that people deal with locking up copyright, and the in particular the idea of undue gatekeeping, that we sort of people in institutional contexts are actually shutting down our access far more than the law itself allows. So the Berkman Center report, there's also an influential report out of the Center for Social Media talking about the costs of copyright confusion, that we actually get much less effective teaching and learning for our students, people are less innovative, and ultimately we, both faculty and students, are fundamentally kind of disabled in speaking using the most powerful and eloquent tools that we have available to us in the 21st century. So my basic argument here, I think, is that these conversations and the decisions that we make around fair use really shouldn't be solely dominated by experts, that is, I think, primarily lawyers and IT people, but really to include in the conversation the voices of people like us, you know, educators, archivists, librarians, students, and even, you know, fans, media makers. One of the things that I think has led to this not being the case as much as it should is that there's been an extraordinary polarization of discourse around copyright in the last few years. The kind of broad brush labeling of piracy, you know, there was this Senate report about investigating whether copyright infringement was being used to fund terrorism. It used to be communism, but now it's you're either a pirate or a terrorist if you're on the wrong side of copyright. The Department of Justice has gone a long way toward talking about the criminalization, the criminal aspects of anything to do with infringement. And then, of course, all of the struggles around digital rights management and its alternatives, and the kind of the arms race between DRM technologies and those who would hack them. And so it seemed to us at the time that really all of this was about a kind of discourse of immobilization, and our tendency at the time was really to be, very careful, very kind of scared about the things that we were willing to do, and to kind of accept those sides of the debate that would have us do nothing rather than do as much as we could. So this kind of middle zone here, which I'm calling cultural and educational, is occupied by organizations like Creative Commons, the kind of alternative copyright licensing scheme that was co-founded by Lessig and others. I have here the Organization for Transformative Works, the OTW, which is actually a fan-vitting organization, which has been doing sort of advocacy on behalf of the right to remix, particularly for video. And then I think perhaps most importantly of all, the work that's been coming out of the Center for Social Media, the series of best practices and fair use guides that Pat Aufderheide and her group has been putting out over the last several years, beginning with the Documentary Filmmakers Best Practices Guide. So this is kind of the zone that I want to focus on today. But I think there's some really significant problems. There's a lot of fear still, where a lot of us are bombarded on a daily basis or a weekly basis, with threats and misinformation from the copyright industries. There's a lot of confusion. And above all, there's very little support that we're likely to receive from institutional structures. There's very sort of low incentives for those institutions to kind of go out on a limb and support the kinds of things that that we might be doing in the classroom that would be making use of copyrighted media.
Excerpt number 2 is about the solution. Steve breaks it down into legal, technical, and cultural arenas. Basically, we need to get informed, get connected, and get active.
For me, that's the solution. I'm going to move on to some of the resources now that I think we have available to us in trying to move forward. Conventional wisdom tells us that there are three fronts for fair use, that we need to make advances in legal, technical, and cultural arenas, and I'm going to point to some examples of that. But the point is that we really need to mobilize in all three of those areas, and to the extent that those efforts can be orchestrated and kind of coordinated and collaborative, I think that's, again, the extent to which we're going to be most effective. So there are good resources that are out there. This is the webpage from the Electronic Frontier Foundation, which hopefully And then again, if you take no other web address away from this presentation, the Center for Social Media and the Best Practices and Fair Use Guides, this is the one I would write down. This is, to my mind, the most important and comprehensive work and resources that are existing in the world. And I can't say emphatically enough how profound the impact of these guides has been for documentary filmmakers and other organizations as well. I think I called that. So that was legal, technical, cultural. I think CSM is doing a combination of legal and cultural work. Creative Commons is kind of the one that's also, you know, hitting all three of these zones with the alternate licensing, advocating open standards, and the kind of like introduction, incorporation of Creative Commons licensing into the technologies themselves. But then also kind of like participating in a cultural and social movement on behalf of copyright alternatives. I almost didn't put in this slide here about the four factors in fair use, because this is kind of the old school way of thinking about fair use, but I put it up here just to say it's not that mysterious. It's actually not that hard to figure out, and I think that there's elasticity certainly in the guidelines that are placed here in the four factors. But this is the kind of thing that ordinary people can understand and actually make good interpretations of. I have had a kind of a polite but public disagreement with Pat Ofterheide of the Center for Social Media about the value of things like this fair use evaluator tool, which I actually think is kind of useful. It is an online survey, a questionnaire that invites you to make a series of statements about potential fair use, and at the end it gives you this kind of evaluation of how strong or how weak your fair use claim is based on your responses to those questions. So that's a kind of four factors type test, and there are a number of these out there. But really, you know, I think a very strong argument is to be made, and Pat makes this argument, and I actually think she's right, that rather than go into the fair factors and these kinds of fair use evaluators, look at the community-specific best practices for whatever your closest community is. And that if you do this, you actually have a potentially broader, stronger, and more defensible way of thinking about what you're doing when you're doing fair use. And CSM has published these, not just the Documentary Filmmaker's Guide, but also guides for media literacy education, for open courseware, for online video. And I think the most recent one they did is for poetry.
Finish up with Steve's excerpt on misconceptions. Number one, you have to be a lawyer to understand fair use. Number two, ripping DVDs is always illegal. And last, number three, exercising my fair use rights is a sure way to get sued.
I'll just run through also a couple of common misconceptions about fair use. Whenever I give this talk, this presentation, these things come up over and over, and I think it's just worth sort of running through them a little bit. First of all, you don't have to be a lawyer to understand fair use. The best practices are very readable. I think, you know, if you don't find what you need in the existing best practices, write your own, or begin working with people to write your own. I think that's a very powerful and underutilized way that we can participate in this process. As I mentioned, the ripping of DVDs is now allowable for broad sectors, especially in academic educational contexts. And then finally, this is, I think, for me, one of the most important ones is there's a lot, because of the extraordinary effectiveness of the MPAA and RIAA campaigns against any kind of copyright violation, there's a lot of fear and a lot of assumptions that the people are getting sued right and left for using media in classrooms, and this is just not the case. On the Center for Social Media website, they just say, we don't even know of a single case of an American media corporation suing somebody for educational use, and this is just something that is very, very few and far between, and the odds are with you. If you're following best practices, acting in good faith, and doing your best to inform yourself and to inform your students about what it is that you're doing. And for me, you know, more so than I think trying to set up the right rules or figure out exactly the right guidelines to follow, often the way this plays out in classroom contexts for me is as teachable moments, that when copyright or fair use comes up, it's really an extraordinary opportunity to invite our students to participate in that kind of ethical process, and to get them to think through, not just like, am I following the rules? Is this allowable? But what do I need to do, and what are the consequences if I do or don't use this any particular example of media in any particular way? And students are actually capable of making quite intelligent, informed, ethical decisions. They actually operate in this zone quite frequently. I think they are aware that they are the, you know, sort of demonized often in these contexts, and they're ready to make some smart and informed decisions on their own behalf.
So I hope you'll be a little bit more assertive when you consider using copyrighted materials in your courses. After all, our students deserve it. I'd also like to thank Steve Anderson and Steve Verona for a quick determination that my use of these excerpts indeed fall under fair use. In fact, everything that Steve Anderson does, he claims, is available for under Creative Commons license for us to do whatever we want with his content. So he's very open about fair use. Again, see the links on my show notes at www.rodspulsepodcast.com. And please stay tuned for Don't Be Long. Until next time, have a great week.
See where things have gone in light of progress. We'll light years ahead of what is success. Make sure that it grows, be a new sense. Someday soon you'll know, you get what's coming. Just reward for action, only coming. Take hold of yourself. It's absurd to think we miss the making. Fool yourself, I know we've stopped dreaming. Please don't be long. Thank you.
it for today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to give Rod feedback. You can leave comments on his blog, send email to rod@rodspulsepodcast.com, or leave audio feedback on his comment line at 610-616-2199. The preceding audio commentary is the product of the author, Dr. Rodney Murray, and does not represent the official viewpoint of the University of the Sciences or any other institution or company.